This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, March 10th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, social media buzzing about the question regarding the Royals, but not about the Royals themselves, but about who won the bet that you and I made the other day before Tim Kurkjian came on. What I said, I thought I said, was, will Tim Kurkjian have awareness of what happened with the Royals in their big interview? You said that he would not. And then we talked to him and he had some awareness through different things that he read. I thought I won the bet. Social media is against me on that. And I think it really comes down to what was actually said in the bet. What do you think?
You know, obviously, I think I'm the winner here. But upon further review, I think when you get down into the language, I think you are actually the winner. So let's play the clip here, and I think we'll come to a decision.
I'm going to ask Tim whether or not he's aware of what was said in the Oprah bombshell interview with Harry and Meghan last night. What's going to be your guess about that?
Oh, there's simply no chance that he knows anything about Harry and Meghan Markle and the Royals.
Oh, so I did remember exactly what I said. Awareness. I didn't say he'd watch the interview.
Mm-hmm. So you are officially the winner, Buster.
Well, I'm not ready to declare myself this. I think I want to put it to Tim. I think Tim is going to be the ultimate judge on whether or not we won this. But I want to hear more from social media, because there's no doubt social media was very big for Taylor and very big against me. So in the end, I think it's good if Tim is the arbiter on this decision. How does that sound?
That sounds good. I'll save this clip and we'll get his thoughts next week.
And because he's a writer, I'm counting on his precision to judge on my side. Because if you go by letter of the word, letter of the words, I think I win. But we'll see. All right. So yesterday, Washington Nationals pitcher Steven Strasburg was back out on the mound. Of course, he had carpal tunnel surgery last year. He struck out four of the six batters he faced. That's a great sign for the Nationals. Texas Rangers reliever Jonathan Hernandez was shut down from pitching for at least 4 weeks with a UCL sprain. What you hope is this doesn't lead to some kind of reconstruction surgery. Jake Odorizzi spoke with reporters yesterday, and he said he's excited to play alongside Zach Greinke. I didn't know this about Jake. The Greinke was kind of his model when Jake was in high school, so those two guys now are teammates. David Price told Andrew Friedman, who is the head of baseball operations for the Dodgers, that he's willing to pitch in any role now that they've added Trevor Bauer. There's some question about how the Dodgers are going to dole out starts with that really deep rotation. Trevor Story had a moment on Tuesday.
3-1 on the way, swing and a fly ball lifted in the air to deep center field, angling to the right, and that one is gone. Varsho watches it go. Back to back for McMahon and Story.
Matt Chapman, of course, such an important guy in the Oakland Athletics lineup. He had a moment yesterday.
He kicks the 3-1. Chapman swings and drills it deep left center field. Hap going back. He's looking up, and it's under the berm and gone. Matt Chapman, a laser to left center, and it's out of here for his second homer of the spring.
Yesterday, the Yankees announced that reliever Zach Britton needs a bone chip removed from his pitching elbow. I'll be talking about that with Dave Schoenfield coming up. And 2 days ago, we got, you know, tough word on Rael Cormier, the longtime major league pitcher, two-time Olympian, passed away at age 53 from cancer. He pitched 16 seasons in the major leagues, and he owned a neat part in Philly's history. He was the winning pitcher in the final game that Philadelphia won at Veterans Stadium in 2003. And then the next year, when the Phillies moved into Citizens Bank Park, he got the win in that game as well. Now, before we get to Dave, to Hembo, and to Kipe, Dwayne Kuiper is going to join us for a preview of the 2021 Giants. Two things I want to mention. Check out Stephen A's World, streaming weekdays on ESPN+. You can also find the best interviews from Stephen A's World available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcast. You want Stephen A's World on ESPN+. And check out the Mina Kimes Show. This week, Mina and Field Yates are talking about what else? Dak Prescott's new deal with the Dallas Cowboys, which is close to what Trevor Bauer got signing with the Dodgers. Listen to the Mina Kimes Show wherever you get your podcasts.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, Their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show. Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
David Schoenfield, who covers baseball for ESPN, and that means talking about the baseball today, Dave. Yesterday, Blake Snell was talking about the baseball, and he talked about how he noticed that the laces are thicker, seams are higher. I got to say, I said on the pod, first off, how you doing this morning?
Hey, it's like going to be 60 degrees out here today. Some of the snow's going to melt. The dogs can go out on the deck. It's a great day in Connecticut.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm going for a long run this afternoon and try to take advantage of the weather. So it was very interesting because I clearly was wrong. I said on the podcast, I think last week or the beginning of the week or at someplace, I talked about how my understanding was that the baseball was not in the hands of everybody yet, the new baseballs. And I actually heard that from a couple pitchers that they indicated they did not have an awareness about whether or not they use the new baseball. Then after Blake Snell's comments yesterday, I reached out to teams today and asked, are you guys, your guys using the new baseball, and what's been the response? And I got absolute confirmation from other teams about what Blake Snell was talking about with the laces being different. And if they're higher, if they're thicker, Dave, this could be the year of the curveball, the year of the slider, the year of the breaking ball. In fact, I was in contact with a major league pitcher today, and he was like, I'm going back to the old college 12-6 hammer.
Look, it's going to be fascinating. You know, the baseball's been paramount in our discussions the last few years. I guess the concern, I mean, last year, the league-wide batting average was 240-something, whatever it was. It was the lowest since 1972, which led to the DH the next year because nobody could hit. But now if the breaking stuff is going to be even more hellacious and strikeouts are what they're at and the ball is, reports are saying, is a little deader, I mean, what's going to happen to offense? You know, we could be getting into a tricky area where – there's not going to be a lot of runs scored this year.
Yeah, that's my instinct too. I'm concerned about it. I remember doing we were trying to kill time during an absolute blowout in that, if you remember that Braves Dodger blowout with the Dodgers score like 14 runs in the first inning. And so we were, talking, Boog Shambi and I, during that broadcast. And I mentioned to him about how back in the day when it was a one-sided score, you could bring in the last reliever on the team, he'd suck up five innings by throwing a bunch of sinkers and getting a lot of ground balls. And Boog said, you know what? That doesn't happen anymore because pitchers come in and they throw their stuff, which increasingly, as you know, a lot of breaking balls. And if there's going to be success found in throwing more breaking balls, my goodness, we're going to see deeper counts. We're going to see more strikeouts. And I agree with you, less offense.
Yeah, I mean, it's look, historically speaking, even though the batting averages have been low the last couple of years, the average runs per game are still right in historical norms. I think 4.65 runs per game last year. That's actually a decent total. You know, you go back to 2014, sort of that infamous dead ball year when we were worried, can anybody hit? And the runs were creeping down closer to 4 runs per game. You know, that's scary territory. You get below 4, and then we're asking, where's the offense? And you're getting a whole bunch of 2-1 ball games day after day after day, and nobody wants to see that. I get it. Baseball wants to not make the game just home runs or nothing, but you got to allow, how are you going to increase batting average? And that doesn't seem like that's going to happen this year.
No, and the perception, I know a lot of fans will say, well, the hitter should just adjust. You know what? You can't do that on the fly. If there are adjustments to be made, they're going to be made next December, next January, when they start to remake their swing. They're not going to be making it. If we come out of the gate and all of a sudden the percentage of breaking balls jumps by 10% and strikeouts are climbing, you're not all of a going to sudden see these launch angle guys trying to slap the ball the other way.
No, and very few hitters have bat control to place the ball where they want. I remember after 2014, we did a story on George on the lack of hitting, and George Brett's like, well, just hit the ball to left field. Well, you're George Brett. You can do that. It's hard to place a 97-mile-an-hour fastball where you want it. So those look, yeah, on some level, they're going to have to adjust. I don't know what that means, swinging earlier in the count rather than working the count. But that's going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight.
So Zach Britton, the one of the key relievers for the New York Yankees, has a bone chip in his elbow. He's going to have surgery. We don't have an exact timeline for the Yankees of how long he's going to be out, but knowing how the Yankees try to be conservative with their treatment of injuries and try to get guys ready for the postseason, it's going to be a long time. And when I saw this, my instinct was, boy, if you are the Rays, if you are the Blue Jays, you're the Red Sox, and you're looking for cracks in the team that's going to be favored to win the American League East, this is one pretty good crack, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think that Yankee bullpen isn't quite what it was a couple years ago? I mean, Aroldis Chapman, you know, he hasn't pitched 70 innings in a season in years. He's basically a 50-inning guy. You know, Dellin Betances obviously is long gone. Now you lose Britton, your number two guy. You know, Chad Green is still there. You know, Justin Wilson, Darren O'Day. A lot of question marks suddenly in that bullpen.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Tommy Canley was a big part of that bullpen. Right. And, of course, he had surgery. You know, he signed elsewhere as a free agent. So it is going to be really interesting to see how the Yankees bullpen is this year. Without Zach Britton in the first half, I'm guessing it's going to probably be at least 3 months. It's going to be a big hit. An interesting guy this spring for me has been Pete Alonso, in part because, Dave, if you look at his history, he's someone who clearly makes adjustments, right? Where he's told by the Mets, look, you have to improve your defense. And so he goes to Tim Tuffle's school of playing first base, tells him, I want to play first base like Paul Goldschmidt, and he shocks the Mets with his development there. He shocks the Mets going into 2019 with how much he progressed as a hitter. He really struggled last year, swung a lot of pitches out of the zone. During the offseason, this most recent offseason, he gets off social media, not doing that nearly as much as he'd done in the past. And it's clear he's focusing on taking the ball the other way, which he did with a home run last week. And he wants to be more patient and to swing at pitches within the strike zone. Draws 3 weeks or 3 walks yesterday. And I'm sitting here watching this and going, man, this guy looks like he's poised for a huge year.
Yeah, you know, I remember when he hit 53 home runs as a rookie, so many of those home runs were to center field and right center. You know, he really has all fields power. I remember last year when he got off to a slow start in August and listening in on a Zoom call, and he was so frustrated by his start, and he talked even then, of course, about making adjustments, but you could tell the frustration was just eating him up. So I think if he gets off to a good start, and I know it's only spring training, but showing that patience, showing that discipline is so key to his approach. That's going to help him start well in April, and that'll help him relax.
A cool story about David Price came out yesterday. He indicated that he told Andrew Friedman at the time that they were talking to Trevor Bauer, and there was, you know, on the surface level, some question about, okay, if the Dodgers sign Bauer, then how many spots will be in their rotation? David Price tells Andrew Friedman, hey, you know, whatever role you want me in, that's fine. I thought that was a really neat story for a guy who won a Cy Young Award in the past. He's basically saying, if you need to move me to the bullpen, if you want to reduce the number of starts they make, that's fine.
Yeah, you know this, Buster. It's not easy for these guys to take their ego and sort of set it aside, especially when you're making $32 million. Maybe it's easier when you're making $32 million or whatever Price is making. But look, the one thing we've always heard about Price is he's a great teammate, right? So he's going to do whatever the team asks him to do. And I remember back in the 2018 playoffs, he started that game on short rest when Chris Sale was unable to go. He came in relief, right, in one of the World Series games. So, look, he's had a great career. He doesn't need to prove anything at this point. He'll do whatever it takes to win.
Well, and I think it does give you some insight into the Dodgers clubhouse. You know, over the last 5 or 6 years, in my conversation with Dave Roberts, it's pretty clear they've had more buy-in to their philosophy of handling players. It's now much more a Chase Utley type team, a Clayton Kershaw type team than it was when Dave took over. Yeah. In terms of how the players are adapting. And so to hear Price basically say, you know what, I just want to win at this stage of my career, that's pretty neat. You had a piece go up on ESPN.com this morning. It was a cool concept. You ranked the strength of each position and with a taking pitcher out of it. In other words, you know, what's best when you rank the various positions? Are the shortstops the best? Are the second baseman the best? Center field or first base, right field, et cetera. What was the sort of the genesis of the concept?
Well, it actually started, me and my editor were talking about all the great defensive center fielders in today's game. And then I thought back, well, what about the late 90s? You had Griffey and Andrew Jones and Kenny Lofton and Jim Edmonds. There were some pretty good center fielders at that point. So that led into this whole, let's rank the positions, compare them historically. Obviously, look, shortstops, number one. Everybody says this is the best crop of shortstops ever. Absolutely true. The last 3 years, Buster, shortstops have hit better than the league average. That had never happened before. Obviously, it's a defensive position, but now shortstops can hit. We all know that. Plus, they're all still pretty young. They're going to be the best position, I think, for quite a while. What's interesting, center fielders have had two of their weakest seasons historically. A lot of great defenders, but once you kind of get past Mike Trout, George Springer, not a lot of offense. So I want to run this by you. When we were growing up, I would say historically, center fielders were, in general, the best players. Joe DiMaggio and Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle and Griffey and so on. Shortstops are the best athletes and the best players in the game right now. Agree? Disagree?
There's no question about it. And just to be clear, when I was growing up, Joe DiMaggio was not playing. I'm not that old. I'd say this, that shortstop is the one position where we have not seen the advent of analytics manifests nearly as much as other spots because you can't really specialize in that spot, right? You can't, you know, whereas we've seen first base and second base have become prime catcher, have become prime places where teams have split up the duties. So Max Muncy one day is playing second base, depending on the, you know, the pitcher for that day. The next day he might be at first base. The shortstop, look, you can't hide bad defenders at shortstop the way you can with other positions. Agreed?
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a basic requirement of defensive skill, you know. But what's amazing is the power they now hit with. In 1984, three shortstops hit 10 home runs. Ripken, Robin Yount, Alan Trammell. In 2019, 27 shortstops hit at least 10 home runs. So they've bulked up. They hit for power. But I don't think this generation is lacking anything on defense compared to the Larry Bowens that we grew up watching. These guys can play the position as well.
Yeah, you and I grew up at a time when shortstops, if they finished with one, two, or three home runs, no one blames. You know, yeah. My favorite player growing up was Bud Harrelson of the Mets, Mark Belanger, Larry Boa. You know, those are sort of the classic good field, no hitter, little hit type shortstops. And now that position is so different. I think in part because the way teams look at it is that, like, look, we're going to park our best athletes at shortstop, hope they're really good defenders, and they're going to get the most plate appearances, generally speaking, on the team.
Yep.
So what positions do you feel like have taken the biggest fall off from?
Well, certainly catchers are lacking in star power. Now, collectively, you know, they're historically in the bottom third, but not at the bottom. But there's no star power at catcher. You get outside, you know, JT Realmuto, we're obviously lacking. For 2021, left field looks pretty thin. In part, Juan Soto, he's moving to right field.
Right.
Jeff McNeil played a lot of left field last year. He's moving to second base. So Christian Yelich will help, but left field, pretty weak.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see if, in fact, as when baseball goes through the next CBA, if they make an adjustment on the rules regarding shifting, if all of a sudden we'll go back to a time when second basemen are more preeminent. That position is a more preeminent position, because for now it seems like teams are using the shift to protect bad defenders at second base. And I don't mean this disrespectfully to, you know, sort of Mike Moustakas or a Travis Shaw, but those guys are great examples of guys who are playing second base because the teams feel like they can protect them in the shift.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So in 2016, second base actually had one of their best years ever. You know, Jose Altuve, that's your Daniel Murphy, you know, finished second in the MVP voting. Cano hit 39 home runs. Last year was one of their worst. So I thought that was going to be the trend, that you would put the Mike Moustakas types at second base. It's happened in a couple examples, but I thought it was actually going to be much more extreme. So it still seems like defense is important at second base. Maybe that evolution is a little slower to develop than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah. The fact that Colton Wong was essentially non-tendered by the St. Louis Cardinals, the best defensive second baseman in baseball, sort of tells you how the feeling is. Someone told me, you know, because I've been talking and writing about how I feel like that the people are going to look back, teams are going to look back and say, boy, I can't believe I didn't sign Colton Wong. I can't believe that I didn't sign Jackie Bradley Jr. You know, good players for moderately priced contracts. And the feedback I got from some front office people relates to what we talked to at the beginning, more strikeouts.
Yeah.
You know, the ball not being put in play as much.
Right. You know, it's really the question of what the front offices have to ask themselves. How important is defense? Because hitting, I mentioned this in the article, when we were growing up, first baseman, left fielders, and right fielders, they were the best hitters, by far better than other positions. Some years center field was okay. Shortstop, second baseman, they couldn't hit at all. You know, but that sort of scale has leveled off. Yeah, first baseman, left fielders, right fielders, still in general a little better, but not to the same extent. I don't know what that means. I think maybe it suggests the overall level of athleticism has improved across the sport. So now players at every position can hit on some level, or at least hit with power. What does that mean about defense? I don't know. There's not a lot of Greg Luzinski types in the game right now either, so I don't know.
All right, Dave. Well, good to talk with you, and enjoy the sunshine today.
All right. Thanks, Buster.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Himbo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Paul Imbachides, researcher at ESPN. He tells us that he is a honcho on the show Get Up. The head honcho, even, Mike Greenberg, completely disagrees with him. How you doing, Himbo?
It is good to hear your voice, Spencer. And talking some baseball, today we actually had a hockey highlight on Get Up, so I feel like this is the apocalypse. So I'm looking forward to talking ball with you today, and as spring training keeps rolling along, I get so eager. Yesterday we had like a 60 degree day here in New Jersey, and I had never felt it before. My wife and I got a puppy in November, and he was outside and had never felt the air feel like that before. Yesterday was magical. We're a few weeks away from opening day. I'm so excited.
Yeah, the temperature is going to go above 60, and I felt myself
awesome
yesterday in the middle of the day sitting out in the sunshine because of the world. It's
going to
be a whole new world in baseball, apparently, because of the baseball, you know, based on what Blake Snell said. I was talking about with David Schoenfield. If, in fact, the seams are higher, and that is what I'm hearing from folks this morning, give me some pitchers who you think are going to suddenly start spinning the ball a lot and getting a lot of great results.
Yeah, there are three pitchers for whom I think this most benefits Buster. The first is the Nelson Lamet of the Padres, a guy that we're really not talking about nearly enough considering all the other moves that they've made. But he uses his breaking ball with more than 50% frequency and generates really good results from it. It wouldn't surprise me. It would not at all surprise me if he was the best pitcher on that staff this season. The second is Clayton Kershaw. As you well know, as he's aged, Clayton Kershaw has moved away from his fastball as his primary pitch and now uses his spin to set up other spin or to set up his fastball. So he's one I expect to be able to evolve very, very well as he has in years past. And the third is Framber Valdez of the Astros. We saw how he came on last season, was outstanding in the playoffs. For my money, was perhaps the biggest reason why the Astros nearly reached the World Series. He spun his breaking ball about half the time in the postseason last year. That big looping pitch, that's a very effective pitch. And again, should throwing more breaking balls this season behoove pitchers, he's another guy who I think benefits from a lot. So it's Lamet, it's Kershaw, and it's Valdez. What do you think?
And you hope Valdez comes back. I think Shane Bieber might strike out like 8,000 guys.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be at Sandy Koufax marks by the time we get to the All-Star break.
I know. That would be – that. It's going to be interesting. I would say this. It ain't going to help the offense, because if there's an excuse for pitchers to throw even a higher percentage of breaking balls, they will take that, which means deeper counts, which probably means less offense. Yes?
And probably more strikeouts, Buster. And as I pointed out, each of the last three seasons across baseball, there have been more strikeouts than hits. That had not happened once in any of the previous 147 seasons. We're watching a new game, and it sounds like, based on the information that you're telling me, it might go even further down that rabbit hole this year.
That'll be interesting. All right, give me three bold predictions. And I know you, Himbo, well enough to know when I give it. Because sometimes I'll see people say, I'm going to give a bold prediction. You hear it, and you're like, yeah, that's not really bold. Like, Dodgers are going to win more than 104. Yeah, that's not a bold prediction. Give me your bold prediction.
Right, by the All-Star break in their case. All right, my first bold prediction. These are going to get bolder as we go. The first is this. Contrary to popular belief, the Cardinals will not win the National League Central. The Brewers will, and I'll tell you why, Buster. First, I think the added value of Colton Wong plus Jackie Bradley will cancel out or equal, if you will, the value added by Nolan Arenado, who is one of the biggest reasons why St. Louis is such a prohibitive favorite. I think those two will demonstrably improve a defense that ranked in the bottom third of the league last season by most metrics. And secondly, the Brewers have more frontline pitching than any team in their division. Bacota says, that's Baseball Prospectus's projection model, that Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns are two of the top six projected starters in the division. And in Devin Williams and Josh Hader, they have two of the top five projected relievers. And that's probably being conservative. You blend all that together with, I think, a very likely bounce back year from Christian Yelich. I have Milwaukee winning the Central. What say you?
I totally disagree. I've said on the podcast before that I think there should be an investigation if the Cardinals don't win the division.
You asked for bold, Buster. I gave you a bold.
Yeah, you got bold. All right, bold prediction number two.
Jordan Alvarez of the Astros will lead the major leagues in home runs this season. I'll tell you why. First of all, there's a really good track record of him as a power hitter in the minor leagues. For every 162 games he played in the minors, he averaged 36 home runs, and in his big league career already has 28 in 89 games. Lest we forget, he slugged 655 in 2019. That was a figure topped only by Christian Yelich. And again, going back to Pecota here, they don't think I'm crazy. In fact, only seven hitters own a better projected batting line than him this season. And his closest historical comps by their model are Mark McGwire, Fred McGriff, and Giancarlo Stanton. What say you?
It's interesting. I'm curious to see, you know, of course, he had the knee surgery last
right.
year. It feels like it's one of those, he had one of those conditions that, you know, at some point was going to have to be addressed. And now it's addressed. And, you know, better than I do. You played further in baseball than I did. The most important thing for him is going to have his foundation, is a power
right.
hitter. And maybe he now has that. All right. Number three.
Buster, if you're looking for this year's Shane Bieber, my best guess is that it's going to be Zach Eflin of the Phillies. And I'll tell you why. Baseball Prospectus generates a stat that I really like called deserved run average, which takes into account a pitcher's underlying stats and quality of opposing hitters. And among 81 pitchers that threw at least 50 innings last year, Buster, Eflin's DRA ranked sixth at 2.85. His FIP, his fielding independent pitching, which, as you know, removes all the variables for which pitchers cannot control, was a tick better than Max Scherzer. So in other words, he was a lot more effective last year than his superficial numbers might suggest. And over a 162 game season, I'm betting on that. What say you?
I totally agree with you. And you know this because you read the column that I write and you hear me. I've been on Zach Eflin since the end of the 2019 season. Like you could see once he took control, because he's a guy who is super nice. He's very pliable. But late in the 2019 season, when he was struggling, he basically said, you know what? I'm going to go back to doing what I believe in. And part of that is throwing his sinker more. But he clearly is evolving. And if the Phillies wind up surprising people this year and contending, he will be a big reason why that happens.
No doubt. Agreed.
Those were bold predictions. No question about it. The Brewers Cardinals thing, we might have to have a little side bet on that since I'm in the process of making bets this week. Hembo, okay. Thank you for doing this.
Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick
exactly
of Hembo.
Right.
Glenn Kuiper broadcasts San Francisco Giants games on television, radio, but really we bring him on for his knowledge about cows because you and I have farm history, Kuiper. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I don't want anybody to think that I'm a cow expert, but I was around him enough to know a little bit.
Well, and that makes you the perfect person to talk about this. This is absolutely a true story. I don't think I told you this story. When I was a kid, I had made up a dice game, two dice, and it was a baseball game. But I always looked at folks like yourself and your peers who played in the major leaguers as gods. And so I couldn't even think about putting gods into my silly little dice game. So I actually used the name of all of our farm animals, mostly our cows, as the players. And even at age 9 or 10 or 11, I was using body types to put them at position. You know, Rebecca was our best jersey. She was a little bigger, so she was a corner infielder, okay? Little third base, little first base. We had another cow named Penny who was faster than the other one. She, of course, was a center fielder. Now, last week, you and I were texting back and forth, and you spurred my memory about all this because we were talking about Marco Luciano, and you texted me, you know what? He's a jersey. And I immediately, as someone who grew up on a, you know, raising jerseys, I knew exactly what you're talking about. And I have great affinity for jerseys. They've got great substance. Holstein's, on the other hand, completely vacuous. So I answered you back and said, Buster Posey is a jersey, right? And that was kind of a fun conversation going back and forth, like saying like Buster Posey's a jersey and these other players maybe we don't like as much, they're Holsteins.
Yeah, well, the truth be known is I knew where you stand when it comes to jerseys and Holsteins. And if I'd have texted back to you and said Luciano's a Holstein, that would have worked out well for him. Because then you'd have got the wrong impression. So I had to lean towards the affection you have for jerseys, and I tapped him a jersey. And in all honesty, you pick out your top jersey when you were rolling dice. Marco would have been one of your guys, and although he's not ready yet, it sure looks like he's going to be someone that's going to be fun to watch down the road.
Yeah, it looks like, and I reached out to evaluators with other teams after having that exchange with you and asked about him, And what I got back was Xander Bogaerts is a comp, you know, a physical shortstop who's going to hit really well. I'm just considering where the Giants are right now. I wonder, based on what I heard, if it's more likely he'll be called up in 2022. But what a fun player for Giants fans to talk about and to watch for over the next year.
Well, I mean, we're finding out, and so is he, that that you know, you're not going to walk into a big league camp or the middle of a season in a big league clubhouse. And most of the time, you're not going to be like Tatis Jr., where you're going to take over right away. In spring right now, I think I just read he's 0-for-12 with 9 strikeouts. And they're all swinging strikeouts. And they're all, here it comes, kid. Can you hit it? And he's not hitting it now. And you could see that he's a little frustrated. So then when you watch him scuffle with the bat, you go, all right, well, is that going to affect him defensively? And what does he look like a big shortstop? And he moves around really, really well. I mean, look, he's going to get bigger, and then the Giants have to make a decision whether they want him to – I mean, I don't know if you can have a kid say, hey, stop growing. but, you know, and there are big shortstops out there, but there aren't big, heavy shortstops out there. And I'm not saying he'd be heavy, but he would definitely put on more weight. So I think they're hoping that that growing process slows down a little bit. As I text you, he's got Hunter Pence shoulders, and that's pretty impressive.
All right, so a lot of that, I think the conversation around the Giants this year is sort of how they're preparing for the end of this time when you had a lot of expiring contracts, you know, Buster Posey, Brandon Crawford, Brandon Belt. and it does feel like that, you know, if in a division in which the Dodgers and the Padres appear to be, you know, maybe the first and second best team in baseball, that the Giants, it might be a year where we're going to be hearing a lot about them flipping assets. What are you seeing in the 21 Giants?
Well, I mean, I was really hopeful that there would be some expanded playoffs and maybe outside chance that that's still going to happen. Because if you add some more teams to go to postseason, then they have a shot to be a wild card team. The problem, Buster, and you know this, is, yeah, the Padres are really good. So are the Dodgers. They're going to have to play those guys almost 20 or 40 times. And then you got to deal with the rest of the league. There are no pushovers. So I think they're going to be okay. I think they'll be entertaining. I think Farhan will find a couple of jewels like he did last year with Gausman and Smiley. Maybe there's a Yastrzemski out there that clearly everybody missed, especially the Orioles. And then, you know, just have some fun. And I do think it's possible, Buster, that the three guys that you mentioned, Bell, Crawford, and Posey, I think there's a really good chance that two of those three could come back for another year. I don't know if they bring them back for 2 years, but I expect that that's possibly going to happen. And for sure, I think Buster's going to have a great year. And I think if he does that, I think he would really want to come back.
Tell me why you feel that way.
We saw it last year in spring training one, where after he had the hip surgery, he actually took healthy swings without a grimace. And his hips looked really, really loose. I've never had hip issues. But the people I've talked to will tell you that, you know, the problem is mobility with your hips. Can you open them up? And he was doing that consistently last year in spring. So then he's got a year off, by making the choice to protect those little girls that he and Kristen adopted. So, you know, the question is what do you lose timing wise when you get up to the plate compared to now you've had this much time off to really, really, really get healthy? So, but I mean, I think he's such a good hitter that all of that stuff is going to come back. And, you know, if you play 162 games, you know, you'd like to see him catch 120. And if he can do that and, you know, be part of who Buster is, you know, then you got a shot of winning more games. I really felt, Buster, that last year, they missed going to postseason by one game. I really felt like if Buster would have been around, even if he doesn't hit, they win six more games.
I really hope that they expand the playoffs before we get to the start of the regular season. I, you know, the phrase that was used last week, which made me laugh, was "it's dead for now," which I don't know what that means. So you mentioned, you touched on Mike Yastrzemski. There's no question Mike Yastrzemski is a Jersey, and also he went to Vanderbilt. Okay, so tell me about what you saw in him as a player last year before you go.
Well, you know, those are guys that, and you know this, Buster, that you really cheer for, because he sat in the minor leagues and he watched people pass him to get to the big leagues. And I don't care what, how great a guy you are, it wears on you. And it hacks you off. And although he never said it, you know, I'm not aware that he ever said it. You know that he thought about it every day when somebody was going to the big leagues and he wasn't. And I say it all the time, and I need to stop saying it because it probably ticks everybody off in Baltimore. But even now, even right now, name one player better than Mike Yastrzemski, even now. And that guy couldn't make it to the big leagues in that organization. And it ticks me off. So I can imagine, you know, what a chip he has on his shoulder. He's a good player, Buster. He gets the ball in the air. He's got something behind it. He's smart in the outfield. I'm sure his grandfather's very proud of him.
Kipe, you're a Jersey. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm a Jersey because I came on your show. If I'd have said no, I'd be a Holstein.
You're damn right.
It's a pleasure, Buster, anytime.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. First up, we got to talk about our friend Bob Olin at Robert Olin. He sent us this video of bird sounds, but they are man-made bird sounds, and I have a lot of feelings about this video. Let's have a listen here real quick.
That's pretty
Alrighty,
good.
Buster.
I like
Bleacher
that.
Tweets for Tuesday.
So those are good, but that is Bob Olin making those noises, and he's staring directly at the cameras. And so it's kind of I feel like the video is we're a little close to him while he's making those sounds. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But you know what? I just, as someone who grew up on a dairy farm and copied a lot of animals growing up, I give him a good solid Bob. I think you know, 8.5, 9 in terms of the execution of a bird sound.
Yeah.
I think that was awesome.
Yeah. They were very good. We are in bed with Bob Olin in that video. It was surprising to see, but I enjoyed the sound. Keep sending the bird sounds in, everyone, please.
Yep.
Let's go to Greg Steinbrecher next. He writes in, "Hey Buster, you talked about Verlander on Monday's pod. I'm curious, do you think he needs to win another World Series for legacy purposes since his only one is tainted, and think that'll affect where he signs next year?"
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, I think there's going to be more of a long-term effect on some of the position players who are on that team because they directly benefited from the sign stealing. You know, Verlander was on a team that won in part because of sign stealing, but I don't think it's going to be as much on him. Bottom line is he should be a unanimous selection when he becomes eligible for the Hall of Fame.
Next up, Dean at Dean DeRoche writes in, "Sorry, Buster, but you 100% lost that bet to Taylor. Tim referenced his previous knowledge, nothing from the interview. In fact, Taylor should get dinner and dessert for correctly guessing Tim and watching all the NBA All-Star game."
I don't know. I'm feeling pretty good about it. Right. I'm feeling pretty good about the letter of the law. We'll hear from Tim next week.
Coach DeMattis at DeMattis2 writes in, "Hi, Buster and Taylor. I was thinking about the position player size comparison to Aaron Judge, and Richie Sexton comes to mind. What are your thoughts?" I have no thoughts on that.
Yeah, Richie Sexton was huge, but he wasn't as big as Aaron Judge. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, Aaron Judge is the biggest position player in history of baseball, 6'7", 282 pounds.
Last one for today, Tom Striegel at TJ Striegel. He writes in, "After hearing daily about your studios in the foothills of Connecticut and just north of New York City, I was wondering, have you two ever met in person?"
Go ahead. You know the answer to that, Taylor.
That is a no. And mostly because of the pandemic. I'm sure we would have come in contact with each other last summer, you know, if all things were, you know, normal. But I'm sure we'll get together here maybe this summer once we both got the vax. You know, maybe next time you roll through Bristol, but, you know, we're definitely overdue for some friendship time, Buster.
Yeah, I know. Well, shoot, this year, trade deadline. We always have the trade deadline special. I did it in person with Josh Macri year after year after year. We got a date.
All right.
Trade deadline special.
All righty, Buster. Hold you to it. Thanks for writing in, everyone.
All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Dave, Hembo, Kipe, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.